Hi, and welcome to Housewives of True Crime.
Welcome.
Welcome. I am Tabitha. Give me Dateline, white wine, and I'll pick up your kids in the carpool line.
The next day, right?
Yeah, the next day.
Okay. And I am Gretchen. I like white wine, true crime, and in bed by 9 because I have a lot of stuff to do in the morning.
We are Housewives of True Crime.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. Housewives of True Crime. Welcome.
Welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving week, Housewives
gobble,
of True
gobble.
Crime, Disco Biscuits and Disco
gobble,
Balls.
Gobble one, gobble, gobble two. Are you listening to that song? Best song ever.
I don't. You told me you were listening to it yesterday. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, everybody tell your Alexa, your Siri to play the gobble song. It's so good. Very funny.
It's Siri, not Suri. It's not Whatever. Tom Cruise's daughter.
Same thing, right?
Maybe it is the same thing. I don't know. She might be a robot. Who knows? Anyways, so I want to tell you what happened to me today because it is in the realm of this week of giving. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So on Fridays, I bring my kids lunch to school, and my one son loves Chipotle. Okay. So It's a $5 kids meal that I get. Right. So it's not expensive, but it's like, whatever. So I get to Chipotle and they were like, oh, we only are taking cash right now because our system's down. And I don't have cash, of course.
Right.
And so the guy in this family in front of me, it was a husband and wife. They were like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll get your food for you. Which I was like, that is so nice. Right. They didn't know how much my, you know, kids meal was, but
oh, that is nice.
Yeah. So then, when they were checking out, they were like, why don't you just pay it forward today? And I was like, well, that's a great idea. I will. And he was like, buy somebody a Starbucks or something. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do that. Well, fast forward, my husband calls me and he is like, hey, I saw you dropped off food for Colton today. I dropped food off for him too. I was like, wait, what do you mean? I was like, what did you drop off? He was like, I dropped off Chipotle. And I was like,
oh,
okay,
so now you got to give it forward twice because that's like bad karma to be so wasteful.
Well, no, because he will. I know what my son will do. He'll just give it to a friend.
Okay.
That is at the lunch table.
Two times giving.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I was thinking we are paying it forward already because we just bought a kid's meal.
Yeah. No, it doesn't work like that. I don't think so.
Fine. I'll buy a Starbucks for somebody too. Actually, I was going to buy a Starbucks. My same son doesn't have a teacher for math. Because I don't know, the teacher got injured and needs surgery and all the stuff. So anyways, so my girlfriend is a substitute teacher. She used to be a teacher. I'm like, please get in there and just be the long-term sub. She was like, if you buy me a latte every day. I was like, I will.
God, you're doing a lot of running around. First of all, I cannot even believe you bring the child Chipotle every Friday. That's extra.
I know
my
it is
kid
extra.
To kick rocks. Okay.
It is extra.
Second of all, bringing a latte to the teacher every day.
I'm not going to bring it every day.
It's worth it if it's a good teacher.
Listen, so math is a really hard subject and you need a teacher that knows how to teach it.
Girl,
and so
you are telling me.
Yeah. So you have to, I mean, I'm literally like Colton for the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks has been sitting there with a sub that just, you know, plays a movie or something. I'm like, what are you doing in the class?
Oh girl, I was doing sixth grade ratios math with one of my children.
Yeah. Do you have to look it up? Because I have to look up all
this
stuff.
Yeah. And so they do it on the online. And I'm like, oh, I got this figured out after I looked it up.
Yeah, you have to look it up. I have to look it all up.
I got the wrong answer.
Oh.
I was like, okay. Now, 1 hour is as long as I will spend learning something that I'm pretty, you know, sure you're never going to use.
They will use it. Maybe they'll be accountants.
Ish. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. Okay.
Well, I will be going to Starbucks later on today myself.
Okay, pay it forward.
I don't usually go to Starbucks because I'm not a Starbucks hoe like Tab. I just drink boring black coffee.
Okay, so if you're watching on YouTube, which you should be, and you should be subscribed, you will see. I am drinking a Starbucks, but I am not as crazy because their prices are so freaking high. I couldn't do it anymore. I was like, it has to be a treat. So it's my Friday treat.
Well, I am going to Starbucks because my friends have this habit that is really annoying. Of sending like TikToks and stuff of espresso martinis. They have an espresso martini affection. And it's like all these fancy espresso martinis, which looks delicious, at places we're never going to go. Because we, you know, so I'm like.
Yeah. So why are you going to Starbucks?
Because I am hosting a couple of them. And I'm like, you know what? Enough talky about the espresso martinis. I'm going to make them for us.
Oh, so you're grabbing espresso at Starbucks. So I'm grabbing
real espresso to like practice. And okay. I'm going to get crazy up in here tonight while my husband's out of town, make cookies and drink espresso martinis all by myself.
Okay. I got it. Guess where I'm going? I'm going to a Mariah Carey Christmas pop-up bar in Dallas.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And so I'm getting real festive. I'm going to look like a damn candy cane.
She's not going to be there. She's the queen of Christmas.
She was here last night in Dallas for a concert, but I, you know, if she, maybe she'll like grace us with her presence. That would be amazing. But I
was just, her song came on the radio recently with my daughter Willow in the car. And my daughter was like, oh my gosh, I did not know Ariana Grande's voice was so high. I'm like, oh girl, no, it's not. That's Mariah. She's the only one on fire. Okay. Yeah,
so true. But she's old now. You know,
fuck like off. Our kids, she's not that old.
For our kids, she is old.
Oh yeah. For our kids,
she's talking Ariana Grande. She's on Megan Trainor and all these Sabrina Carpenters.
Oh, it's beyond that. She's into these people I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Okay. Well, let's get to our story today.
Get it.
All right, Gretchy Poo. Today's case comes out of Portland, Oregon. Okay, are you familiar?
Yeah, I am. I'm familiar.
Have you been?
Several times.
Oh, okay. Well, there is a population of 630,000 people in Portland, and it is also the largest city in Oregon, which 630,000 doesn't sound like that big for the largest city, but I guess with all the suburbs and all that, there's like 3 million.
I think they also have like the most strip bars per capita.
Yes, I heard that too, along with Vancouver.
Adult stores?
Vancouver up in the north also has lots of strip clubs.
It's a real interesting place, Portland.
Okay, I've never been.
It's like hippy dippy.
That's what I was going to say.
Like it is super hippy dippy, and there's an amazing food and bar scene that's like so cool. And then there's just a lot of people who like to get their freak out, I guess.
So maybe it's because it's so cold and rainy. And
there's
so
not much to do but eat and bang.
Okay, I mean, people love it, and now I know why.
Yeah.
I have not been. Mm-hmm. And I think I haven't been because it's too cold and rainy. And if you all know, I do not like
I like a tree
things.
And a fire. So
it's your jam.
It's totally my jam.
Yeah. Portland is also the home of the University of Portland, which is located in University Park area in the city. And it's on top of a bluff overlooking a river and downtown Portland. It sounds like I would actually like that. I also like me a college.
Oh, yeah.
So fun.
College towns are fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's considered a small college with around 3,200 undergrad students, which is pretty small, actually. Mm-hmm. And they also are a Division I sports college. They are known for their top soccer program in the country. So if you have
there's like a big sports connection up there. Okay. Yeah. There's like Nike and Adidas, or maybe not Adidas, but Nike and some other shoe company. They both have buildings like right outside.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I don't know. People
and they have like
there.
Olympic training camps or something there. Even there's shoes and shit.
There's this Washington, which is not very far from Portland. They have like the biggest pole vaulting school too. So I was trying to get my daughter to think about that, but she does not like either Washington. So not that she's ever been there. So how does
she
even
know?
I know. She's like, no, not going there. All right. Well, anyways, just like other colleges, this school runs from August to May. And students, you know, live in the dorms during college and then they move out during summer break. However, the school does use the dorms to house people who come in for like reunions or conferences. So they hire a student manager during the off season. So if you wanted to have a job and a house, like housing, you could, you know, apply to live in there and get paid, which sounds kind of like it would be up my alley, except for the fact that I think you kind of live alone in a big, huge dorm, which doesn't sound like up my alley. It sounds scary to me too. Mm-hmm. Well, this university has only had one murder on its campus in the whole 123-year history, and I'm going to tell you about that. In May 2001, 25-year-old Catherine Mary Helene Johnson, who went by Kate, had just finished up her junior year in music education and had been hired to stay the summer in this 8-story-tall, 195-room dorm called Mailing Hall. Mailing Hall is an all-female residence hall during the school year and the tallest building on campus. Sounds humongous, actually, like almost like a hotel. There was one other building manager besides Kate, who was also a woman, who was assigned to live on a different floor. So Kate had a room on floor 2, and this other girl had a room, like, I don't know, floor 7, something like that. Just before the spring semester ended, on April 25th, Kate had celebrated her 21st birthday. So this is when school was still in town, in session. She went with her friends to a local bar to celebrate, but Kate didn't really drink alcohol, so she didn't have any cocktails while they were out. After the semester ended, on like May 22nd, Kate went out with friends to another club. She liked clubbing, but she didn't like drinking.
That is such a unicorn.
She is such a unicorn. Yeah, she's a total disco biscuit, by the way.
Yeah.
And she had lots of friends. So at this point, she's now, you know, working in this dorm room or living in this dorm room and just kind of hanging out with friends during the summer. So her friends decided to meet up again on campus and eat later that week. So then on May 29th, which was the day that they were going to meet up, Kate didn't show up for their planned dinner. And it wasn't like Kate. Mind you, you know, it's 2001. So she's the same exact age as me, actually. We did have cell phones at that point, but like,
I can't even remember.
We did because so we knew each other, me and you knew. This is when I was 21. Actually, I turned 21 May 6, 2001. So we had cell phones, but we didn't use them like we do now. You know, like, I don't think, like, we weren't really texting at all. So it was like you called if you had to, or like, I think me and you.
And not everybody had a cell phone. My boyfriend at the time definitely didn't, because I could not be keeping track of his ass.
He still had a pager.
A lot, I remember.
Yeah.
No pager.
No pager or cell phone? What kind of dinosaur is he?
His brother had a cell phone and they worked together. And every once in a while, you know, something would happen.
Sometimes he
would leave for work with my car keys in his pocket because he didn't
know.
He didn't have a car. And so
sounds like a real winner. Is this that hippie guy?
He's a very nice person.
Does he start with the J?
I believe he has transportation now.
Oh, I mean, at 48, I hope
he
so.
He is a nice guy.
He's probably actually 50 at this point.
Yeah, or more. Yeah. But
Okay, let's not talk about
trouble. Yeah.
Let's not talk about
he would
Gretchen's
leave
old
with
dude
my keys and I would have to call his brother up and be like, dude, where's my car? Like, where's my ride?
I think that's
you know what I'm saying. Where's my keys?
I think that's an Ashton Kutcher movie.
That's why I said it, because I'm wicked funny.
You are so funny. Okay. All right. Well, I do not know if Kate had a cell phone or not, but I do know that her and her friends planned to meet on May 29th for dinner on campus, and Kate did not show up, and it wasn't like her. Okay. So one of her friends went to her dorm room and started knocking on the door, knocking, 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 and nobody answered. So her friend opened her door. I'm not really sure how she opened it. I don't think she had the key. It must have been unlocked. Inside, she found Kate, and she was nude, lying on the floor inside her room. Her friend immediately ran out and found somebody on campus, like an employee, who came back with her to check Kate's body. They did not find a pulse, and so they called 911. She told the dispatcher that Kate was like very cold to the touch. So first responders came to campus into Mailing Hall, and the scene was pretty violent. It also looked like somebody attempted to clean up after themselves. They found a jug of bleach at the scene and a towel with some hair rolled into it. And so it just kind of looked like they were trying to like wipe away any type of evidence that might have been left at the scene.
Dude, bleach might as well be blood. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The entire 8-story dorm had been cleared, right? Because there was nobody in there except for these two managers. So that whole week there was like, it was empty. They did look for the other manager right away, 'cause they were like, holy cow, like this is crazy. But she was found and she was unharmed. They also had to check every single room in that entire building to make sure that nobody was just like lurking in there to do something bad to somebody else.
Scary.
The medical examiner that saw Kate right away said that he felt that Kate's clothes were removed post-mortem. He also noticed distinct marks on Kate's wrists that looked like they were handcuffs. There was some sort of like railroad track pattern on her wrists. And he also thought that Kate had been strangled, but they needed to perform an autopsy to be sure. Now, it got a little chaotic at the dorm, and, you know, news spreads very quickly. And so despite all the police efforts to keep the press away, it made evening news pretty much right away. Police were still trying to, you know, process the investigation, but the news was saying like, something's going on at Mei Ling Hall. It sounds like they found a body. Well, unfortunately, Kate's mom, Eddie, was watching the news, and she knew there was a body that had been found. And she said she knew it had to have been Kate because Kate would have called her to say, hey, something's going on and I'm okay.
That's awful.
So she calls the university and they do confirm that unfortunately it was Kate that was found dead. And like any mother would do, she hit the floor, and police would eventually make their way to her house, but it was too late. Like, she already knew that it was her daughter, and her name was either Eddie or Edie. Saw Kate was 2 days before her death when they went to a musical together. So it wasn't like very long before. Police, you know, did their investigation in the room, and they actually found a journal. And they brought it to her mom. She was super surprised because she didn't even know that Kate kept like a diary or journal or anything like that, which I think some people just kind of keep that to themselves anyways.
Yeah. You know, I stumbled across one of my daughter's journals.
And did you know that she had one?
Well, she was mad at her sister for using it. And I was like, what is the big deal? You have like a million.
Oh yeah. Like
books
notebooks
to write
or whatever.
In. Yeah. She was like, well, that is my very special one, mommy. So I do not want her. So she was like, I was like, why, what's in it? She was like, I don't want to talk about it. I was like, okay. So then when she left the house for the park later,
did you read it?
Yeah, I totally read it. There was nothing good in there. Nothing at all.
Oh,
so I don't know what she was tripping on.
Oh God. Okay. Really, well, that's probably good that there was nothing good. So the diary provided detectives with some clues. Basically they wanted to know like who people were that she wrote about. There was one man that she wrote a lot about named Paul, who was a foreign exchange student, Paul Monfils. Kate had met him a year prior, but he was from France and he was back in France. They kind of decided that that was not who it was. And they looked into kind of everybody else, but Kate was what they call a pure victim. Her background, like, had absolutely nothing. Like, girlfriend doesn't even drink, right? She does not do drugs. She doesn't have a boyfriend. She doesn't have debt. She is like a squeaky clean. Like I told you, like a total disco biscuit.
She doesn't draw hard lines. She's not a bitch.
No. No, she probably doesn't even judge people that like do really bad things like I do. Mm-hmm. She was beautiful. She loved her parents. She even like held her mom's hand still at 21, which I don't even get that at 14. Mm-hmm. She was a devout Catholic. She spent her spare time volunteering. Her favorite charity was Habitat for Humanity. And she's
a good one.
I know, it really is. And she spent countless hours helping that organization. And I'm just going to tell you this like side note, but one night shortly after Kate's death, her mom had a really surreal dream that she was sitting down and she felt Kate behind her. And she told Kate, like, you're not real. And Kate was like, yeah, I know, I'm not alive anymore. And she told her, well, who killed you? And Kate said, why? She's like, because we need to know, because he could hurt somebody else. And Kate started telling her mom, remember, this is a dream. And it was really scary and it hurt really bad. And then Eddie in her dream was like begging her, tell me just who hurt you. And then she woke up. which it's so, to me, that happened to me when we had a friend that died. Like, yeah. And that's happened to me with my grandma and my grandfather. Like, I feel like those real. Are real. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Remember we both had this dream experience about our friend that died, and it was in the same place, which was so weird.
You'll have to jog my memory again.
Okay.
I remember having these crazy, crazy dreams where this is the same thing. Like she knew she was dead and I knew she was dead, you know? But anyways, her mom did say she was super grateful for that dream because she got like one more chance to be kind of around her daughter.
Yeah.
So back at Mailing Hall, after the building had been checked, investigators like isolated her room and she had one bathroom attached. She had like the RA's room. So it has like a little bit more, you know, than just most dorm rooms. Most of them had maybe a sink in it, but no bathroom. This one had like the whole living situation. So they basically tore Kate's room apart. And they sent hundreds of items to get forensically tested, which I totally appreciate. Thank you so much for doing that. Crime scene photos showed blood on the carpet, on the bed, in the shower. It also showed some like clear substance on the pillowcase. They weren't sure what it was on the pillowcase. They thought maybe it was seminal fluid, if that's how you say it.
Spermatozoa.
Spermatozoa, if that's if you're saying it like Gretchy.
I know that that is the actual word.
Okay. But it wasn't spermatozoa. It was saliva.
Okay.
But it was a bodily fluid. And it was a bodily fluid that was not Kate's. The autopsy revealed also that Kate had been violently attacked. She was sexually assaulted. And she was strangled. The perpetrator had been very rough with her, pinching her skin. And so they did like lots of swabs all over her body. And they found some DNA on her wrists too. Mm. So the DNA profile did come back from the pillowcase and from the wrist that matched each other. And they put it through CODIS. And unfortunately, they did not find a match. So either this guy, it's like his first time doing this, or maybe just real careful. I'm not sure. As the investigation continued, detectives tried to figure out how the killer got in. Kate's room was on the second floor. And there was no forced entry. So they were like, well, he guess I could have climbed the drain pipe to get access. But you know, dorm rooms at that time, and I don't know how they are now, but this is exactly how mine was. Like to get into the main building, you had a key card or like your like ID would kind of open it, like a similar to a hotel.
Okay.
And then your actual physical dorm room had a key, like a old school
key. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like a key you put in.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it was here. But there was a master key that the administration had, maintenance workers had, and security, like campus security had, that could open every single room in the dorm. So the investigators were like, okay, who has a master key? Because it looks like somebody with a master key got in here. And the administration was like, well, we don't really know. Because they never kept track. And it was one of those like, you could get an extra key made, right? So the police were like, okay, well, has there been any other crimes committed on campus in the near future or the near past or whatever, present, whatever? Like, has there been any crimes that have happened on this campus? And the university was like, actually, yes, we had some break-ins in our dorm on spring break. And there was some jewelry taken from a few rooms. But other than that, people didn't notice anything missing. Also in these break-ins, there was no like forced entry. It just like some jewelry went missing.
Yeah. So that seems like a good time to change the locks.
Right.
There's a criminal on the loose with the key.
I know. But 195 locks. That's a lot of locks to be changing.
Well, that'll teach you to keep track of those master keys.
That's true.
And print that do not replicate thing on them because you know what? I have taken a key to get printed and it said, do not replicate. And they would not replicate it
for
me.
Same. So it made detectives wonder if those burglaries could be related to Kate's death.
Logical.
Which is logical, but I also think like a burglary to a murder is pretty
extreme.
It's a jump, yeah. But okay, so remember I told you the security department had the master keys. And so, and on her wrists looked like there had been handcuffs. So that was the first place they thought. They were like, ah, okay, let's go to the security department and let's swab every single one of these guys. And they did. And then they had no matches. No DNA matches. So then they decided to widen their net and track down all the males that were on campus that day. Employees, priests, visitors, coaches. It didn't matter. If you were a dude, you were going to get swabbed.
I like it.
And by the way, like at this, like when I say you're going to get swabbed, you have to like voluntarily say, okay, swab me. Just let you know. Like you have to have a warrant if you really seek somebody out. But all these people were like, yeah, sure. 400 individuals were like, no problem. Here's my DNA. And it takes a minute for that to come through, like months. And all those samples came back clean.
Yeah, of course, because the real person's not going to give us the sample.
Right. So spring turned to summer. And at the end of the summer, it was time for a new school year to begin. That meant that students were going to return to campus. But dude, like people do not want to go back into that dorm.
Oh, hell no. I'm sure. It sounds like a horror movie.
Right? Totally.
Someone on the loose with the master key and all the girls are like,
yeah, hell to the no.
Do not know.
Yeah.
I'd be bunking up if I had to stay.
They were really nervous. Yes.
Yeah.
And so people were putting a lot of pressure on the police department to solve Kate's murder. So Portland Police Department had never before put a task force together like this. But for Kate's murder, that's exactly what they did. They got four detectives and assigned them to primarily focus on just this murder. They had DNA, so find out who the heck this person is.
Embrace new beginnings. What a better way to start off 2025 than to learn a new language. I got Rosetta Stone over a year ago and have really enjoyed learning a couple different languages. Y'all know that when I went to Japan, I was learning Japanese, and now that my daughter is taking French in school, I am learning French through Rosetta Stone. It's amazing. It's been around for 30 years, so it is really the most trusted online tool to learn a new language. They have 25 different languages to choose from: Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, Dutch. I mean, if you name it, they probably have it. I think that it's amazing, and you should think about doing this for your New Year's resolution too. It's convenient and flexible, and the value is unheard of. You get a lifetime membership for all 25 of those languages. Start your New Year's off with a resolution that you can reach. Today, Housewives of True Crime listeners are going to be able to take advantage of this New Year's special from Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your New Year's offer at rosettastone.com/today.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, and your retirement, even during the holidays. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you. And you don't need a ton of time. You can create your Acorns account and start automatically investing your money in just 5 minutes. Acorns helps you build your financial future in the background so you can focus on all your holiday shopping and parties. So genius. Another great thing about Acorns is you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now. That could be $5 a day or even just your spare change. That's right. Acorns can round every purchase you make up to the dollar automatically and invest your spare change for you. So that coffee you grab on the way to the mall, that's investing. And you get bonus investments just for buying the stuff you need from the brands you love. With Acorns, every single gift you buy this year could put more money in your investment account. It's like cash back, but the bonus investments have a chance to grow. So head to acorns.com/clink or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Pay client testimonial. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns investing. Involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/clink. Lady listeners, are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you are, you are most definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormonal disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. They are in our food, water, the air we breathe. They are all up in our business, messing with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier through these changes. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. I've been taking Hormone Harmony for months and will keep on keeping on because it just makes life easier. I feel less stress, less bloat. And just even, I feel more like myself. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CLINK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code CLINK for 15% off today.
They felt very strongly that this was like the only way that they were going to solve the murder, which I would agree. And so they started to dig further. And they realized they may have missed some people in their DNA collection. And one was a woman's running coach from a nearby community college who had been on the university campus that day. So they went over to the coach's home and they were like, hey, dude, will you submit your DNA because you were on campus this day? And he was like, yeah, go F off, get off my property and bring me a warrant. So that's a big ass red flag.
Right.
So the task force basically were like, okay, well, we're going to follow your ass around because we can just pick up what you throw away and get your DNA that way. Well,
I love it when we do that.
I love it too. It's like, why I want to be this. I'm like, I want to do that. So they follow this guy. He wasn't hard to follow because he frequented a bar like every single night, but he kind of changed his, I don't know if he knew they were stalking him or what. So he changed his bars and didn't go out of the house. So they didn't get, like, they didn't snag his drink. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes they'll like set up a meeting with them.
I know. And like give him a cigarette or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was top of the suspect list, but they were, you know, they're like, we can't issue a warrant for this guy that just happened to be on the campus that day. There's not enough evidence to seek that out. Right. Yeah,
that's annoying.
So they continue to look for campus employees, and they realized that there was also a priest that they didn't get the DNA for because he had gone on a mission trip the day after Kate's body was discovered. So they kind of just waited for this guy to get back into the country to get his DNA and question him, right? Kate's mom was very, very eager to figure it out. She was in connection the whole time with the detective. She and Detective Shirley Parsons, who was on the case, grew super close with each other. They actually became friends. And the task force continued to go through evidence and, you know, talk to people. And I really credit this task force because I think at that point, after I took like 102 or 402 people's DNA and didn't find anybody, I feel like you would feel deflated. Like that's almost like probably everybody that lives around the campus. However,
no, I think you have to be like our friend Tom Smith from the Gold Shield, who is like, he said during our interview with him, he would sit there and think the suspect is sitting on their couch right now laughing because I can't find them.
I know.
I think you have to have like that like mindset to just keep fueling you to do like all the monotonous work.
Yeah. Well, somebody tipped them off about a group of guys that were playing poker the night of Kate's murder near the campus. So they decided to hit up these guys and collect all the DNA from the guys playing poker. Well, Detective Parsons, she was assigned to look into this specific man named Dennis Idener. And he wasn't pretty, he wasn't too hard to find. Okay. He was an immigrant from Turkey that had married an American woman. And when Detective Parsons interviewed him, he said, oh yeah, I didn't come forward because I am an immigrant and I didn't want to be sent back to Turkey. And she said, it's, you know, we're not the INS, so we don't care about your status. We just need to find Kate's killer. So Dennis willingly provided his DNA to the detectives. Meanwhile, the priest, remember, he was coming back. So he also, when he came back, gave the DNA to the investigators without protest. And then with all DNA testing, it just takes time. Actually, they have DNA testing now that doesn't take time. But in 2001, you know, we're waiting months for this stuff. Yeah. And hot damn, guess what?
It was a dude.
What dude?
The protest did it.
No.
It was a priest.
No.
Who was it?
It was Dennis, the guy from Turkey.
Oh.
The guy playing poker.
Well, why wouldn't that dude give up his DNA?
I don't know.
So stupid. You are like,
and then you're just making them follow you and taking time away. That really pisses me off.
That does piss me off too. You are slowing down a investigation, asshole.
Yeah. Just give it up. When they say it's not you, it's not you. Move on. Or what else does he, you know what?
Maybe he did something else.
Maybe he did something else. Yeah. I'm still going to put a pin in that guy.
We're watching you.
So Detective Parsons was over the moon that they finally had like a name, right? They knew. And so the task force immediately filed an arrest warrant for Dennis or Denise. I don't know. His name is D-E-N-I-Z. Okay.
Okay.
Except there's a problem.
Oh.
Guess where Dennis is?
Turkey.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And guess what Turkey is? Untouchable.
Untouchable. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there's no way the Turkish government is going to get
A lot of people. Okay, I'm remembering.
You can't extradite.
People like fled like Iran and stuff, which they go to Turkey back then when there was, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's now November 2003, a year and a half after Kate's murder, and they finally found this guy and poof, he's gone. But not too long after this man just disappeared in Turkey, a little glimmer of hope came through from the Turkish government. Apparently, his wife, you know, the U.S. citizen lady, she applied for him to come back to the United States under a different visa this time. So if you remember, when detectives interviewed him and collected his DNA, he was concerned that he was going to be, you know, deported on his immigrant status. Well, this time he was coming back on a, or before he was coming back on a work visa. Now he wanted to come back on like some sort of spousal visa or something like that. Oh, and this is why he said he left, but I think he left because he knew he was like, just gave up his DNA. So he applied for this new one and they told the American government that he was looking at coming back. So Detective Rich Austria contacted Immigration and Customs and requested that they expedited this visa for Dennis. They wanted to get him back in the United States like as quick as possible. They also, at the same time, put a press release out saying that the task force that was to find Kate Johnson's murder was being disbanded and the investigation was being abandoned, right? So they did this because they wanted Dennis's wife to hear this news and be like, oh, they're not looking for you, or tell him like, you know, all is good in the hood. You can come back. They're not even looking into this issue anymore. The only problem.
Would his wife be like,
I don't know.
I feel like I would not want him back if I was the wifey that like knew that he had done this.
I don't think she knew, but maybe he was watching the news too for like, you know, I mean, he knows he did it.
Maybe
so,
he spun it to her like, they're just going to put it on me because I'm an immigrant.
Yeah, probably. So anyhow, they put this press release out, but they could not tell Kate's mom that it was like basically fake.
Mm.
So they did not want to risk the investigation at all. So poor Kate's mom thinks they just abandoned her daughter.
I feel like you could have told her.
I feel like you could tell her too. I think that if you're a mom, I think you could trust the mom to
not to tell her.
Yeah. I know. I kind of do too. So meanwhile, in Turkey, the U.S. Embassy was working really closely with this task force to ensure Dennis would fall into police's hands as soon as he got back into the U.S. So mid-December 2003, the embassy sent a letter to Dennis's wife saying that he'd been granted a waiver and be able to return to the United States. The email instructed her to have her husband report to the U.S. Embassy in Ankara, Turkey, to follow up with his application. He went as instructed. He was fingerprinted and told they had to hold his passport until he bought his plane tickets to America, which he did. He bought tickets to Portland and sent a copy to the embassy as requested. Then they sent him his passport and a 3-day visa with a envelope that was sealed that said, do not open. I don't know what was in that envelope, but whatever. He asked why this visa was only for 3 days. And they were like, oh, don't worry. Once you get into America, you're going to get an extension, like a lifelong extension there, yeah. Dennis. So he headed back January 16th, 2004. And when he landed in Portland, Oregon, the task force had met him at the office, at the immigration office, at the gate, and they escorted him into a conference room where he walked in and saw giant poster-sized pictures of Kate all around the conference room.
Boom.
Isn't that awesome?
It is.
Standing next to them was a group of Portland detectives and uniformed police officers. Once they had Dennis detained in the conference room, they notified detectives that were by his wife's house, and they had warrants in hand so that they could immediately, you know, execute a search warrant. And guess what they freaking found?
What?
A pair of handcuffs. Mm-hmm. And they found jewelry that was taken from the dorm rooms.
Oh my God, they should have changed the locks after the jewelry.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The next thing the task force had to do was notify Eddie that they found Dennis, or she didn't even know that they even had somebody, right? So the detective, Parsons, who I told you about earlier, that had grown close to Kate's mom, well, she had retired shortly before this, like actually right after they got the DNA match, she retired. And she was like so ecstatic that she was going to be able to tell Kate's mom that they had found a match and that they found the guy and that he was locked up. And so she went over, she actually called her and said at work and said like, hey, I need to meet with you. And she was like, does it have to be today? And Detective Parsons was like, actually it needs to be like right now, like right now. And so they met up and she's like, I didn't break my promise. I like retired after we got him. I just couldn't tell you we got him.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, so awesome. All right. So back in the conference room at the airport where Dennis was desperately trying to convince the detectives that there was no way he could be the guy, right? He was just a regular old married guy. He did provide a little bit of information, though, that he had been around Kate before. He told detectives that he had been at the same bar as Kate when it was her birthday. Remember when she went out with her friends like in April? He was like, oh yeah, I saw her before at this bar and I just asked her how she was doing. He swore that that was the only contact that they ever had had. But when the detectives asked him how his DNA ended up on her pillowcase and on her body, Dennis then said, I'll need a lawyer.
Yeah.
And so that's when he was taken into police custody. With this new information about Dennis having an interaction with Kate at the bar, which was like a big, you know, like a big ding, right? Like, Okay, this is now a month prior to her death. So
I love it when they're dumb like that and they let out little.
Oh yeah. It was like, it was such
breadcrumbs.
A good breadcrumb, right? Because like they've got her picture all up and he's probably like, okay, like, maybe I'll just say I knew, like I saw her one time before. Mm-hmm. So they go back to Kate's friends and they say, you know, like, hey, remember on the birthday, did something happen with this dude? And the friends said they didn't think of it at the time when she first was murdered, but they do remember an altercation between Kate and a man who had been yelling at his wife while they were at the bar. Kate actually confronted the man and told him that he couldn't talk to a woman like that. He got real pissed and told Kate that in his country, women don't talk to men like she was talking to him. So that man obviously was Dennis. So that provided kind of a theory as to why Dennis would have a motive to target Kate. And I think that's what it did.
Man, that is real grudgy, Dennis.
Dude. I mean,
people be getting into little rows over
whatever
bars all the time. Yeah. That's how we roll in this country.
Right. Yeah. But you know who has more bar fights than our country?
Who?
England. Oh. It's like a thing. Like a brawl happens in, and I think even in Ireland too, they like get all crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think they like don't close. Or maybe they close.
That's probably why. That's probably why. You let them drink too much, it's like, it's over.
Over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so detectives were able to uncover that Dennis actually tracked Kate down to Mailing Hall at the university and probably stalked her a little bit. And then ended up contacting one of his friends that worked for campus security to get a copy of that master key.
Oh my gosh. It was that much an affront on his ego that she said that to him.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. With the DNA evidence and now the information about this altercation at the bar, Dennis was charged with aggravated murder, which carries the death penalty in Oregon, which is actually kind of surprising because it's like so crunchy up there.
Yes and no.
One count of kidnapping in the second degree, one count of sexual abuse in the first degree, one count of attempted rape in the first degree, two counts of sodomy in the first degree, and four counts of burglary in the first degree. So he had a lot on his plate there, Dennis. In mid-2005, Dennis's lawyers petitioned to dismiss the charges based on the actions that the police took to coordinate with the State Department. They claimed that it violated the extradition treaty between Turkey and the U.S., but thank goodness the state court dismissed that petition. In the midst of all of this, the district attorney had come up with the plea deal, of course, and the DA's offer was that if Dennis confessed to Kate's murder, he would be eligible for parole in 37 years. Before they offered it, thankfully, they wanted to make sure that Eddie, Kate's mom, was okay with it. And so the detectives met with Eddie to discuss, and they kind of told her, like, there's a lot of evidence for sure, like strong evidence against him, but it is a trial if we go, and it's not always, doesn't always go in your favor. However, I think it would have.
I think so too.
Just saying. But maybe she didn't want to go through the whole.
It is a lot to go through.
I think it is a lot to go through.
But, you know, in addition to there being physical evidence, like the DNA, I think that just when the jury hears that that's what she said to him, I mean, doesn't that makes like the hairs on the back of my neck stand up when mm-hmm. I hear it, like, well, in my country, you know, women don't talk back. Da, 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 da. It just puts a light on him like, oh, you're that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like that.
Guilty.
Yeah. So Kate's mom said that she wanted to, she said yes to the plea deal, except for she wanted to meet with him one-on-one before.
Oh, she's badass.
I know. I would too.
Yeah.
The defense attempted two more petitions to dismiss the charges. And the second one was actually pending when Dennis suddenly just said he would accept the plea deal. With the acceptance, it meant that Eddie got to have a one-on-one meeting with him, and she told him that he had not ruined her because she had forgiven him, which, I mean, Eddie, listen, I give you so much kudos for that because I just don't, I don't think I could do it. Mm-mm. And the only thing that she wanted to know was why, but Dennis never gave her an answer. His response was just incomplete and vague. So on February 16th, 2006, he formally pled guilty to Kate Johnson's murder. And Eddie looked squarely at Dennis and said, "No one can ever take our memory of the past. Not even a murder can separate us from Kate." This douchebag is spending his sentence at Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem, Oregon. It doesn't really list when he's eligible for parole on their prisoner page. It did give him credit, like 2 years credit for time served when he started his sentence in 2007 or 2006. So, I mean, based on math, he would have like 17 years left. And then okay. also,
around
if he
how
ever,
old is he now?
You know, I don't know that. I should know that. I don't know it. But if he is ever released, it is in there that he would immediately be deported back to Turkey.
Oh, that's good. And I would imagine if he was, I mean, even if he wasn't deported, he would be a registered sex offender. So
yeah,
they'd be
for sure.
Tabs Let's, on him.
Okay. So he lived next to the university. He was married. I would say he was probably 25 years old at the time.
Okay.
And so in 2001, so he's like probably 50.
Yeah.
So he'll get out of jail.
Yeah. I don't like that.
I know. I don't really like that either. Eddie did read Kate's last journal entry on an episode of The Wonderland Murders. It was dated May 27, 2001, just 2 days before she was murdered. And it read, "I am so very blessed, Lord. I cannot thank you enough. You are my life and my heart. Tonight, my prayers are with others." She signed it as she did all of her pages in her journal with a big heart and a cross in the middle.
Ugh.
Sad, huh? There's no word on who gave Dennis that master key or if that person faced any legal consequences. And I also don't know if his wife stayed married to him or not. I mean, I really hope not. I'm going to think she was a better person than that. And she has like long since forgotten about this guy.
I hope that she feels free of him, because I imagine he was not very kind to her.
Yeah, I imagine that too. And then just a little bit about Kate. She was born on April 25th, like I said, 1980 in Hillsboro, Oregon, but she grew up in across the Columbia River in Vancouver, Washington, which a lot of people do, because if you get the best of both tax bracket things, you know, one has like no sales tax and one has no income tax, something that. Mm-hmm. She graduated from high school and went to major in pre-med before she decided to follow her heart and switch her major to music education. And she, you know, loved volunteering, and she did a lot of it. And since she did do a lot of it, the university since 2002 awards one student a year in the Kate Johnson Award for Outstanding Volunteer Service to honor her legacy.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So that is the story of Catherine Mary Helene Johnson. A sad one. So sorry about that. Happy Thanksgiving. We can just maybe, you know what I like about Kate, and maybe she can just help all of us just do more charity work if we can, and kind of like pay it forward, like my Chipotle person, whatever it is. You know, I know a lot of people can't afford to do a lot of charity things. But even just making a card, like we made cards the other day with my daughter for the nursing home. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't take any, it just takes a little bit of time, but doesn't really take a lot of money. You could just get like, I don't know, like cardstock, you know?
Yeah. I think that stuff is great. I mean, I'm sure the people at the nursing home love it, but I think it's always just good to do stuff like that with the kids. And then just to remind them, it opens the conversation for, you know, you've got it pretty good.
100%.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I do Meals on Wheels, and I go to these old people's homes and deliver food. And they don't have, like, the person that delivers that food is the only person they see for probably like every day for like, God knows who knows, right? I did it the other day, and I have this like one route that I do, and like the guy died. Did I tell you that?
No, that's terrible.
Yeah. There was a new person in the room. It's kind of like a standalone. It's not a standalone. It's like kind of like I think it's like an old person's, not a retirement home, but it's like little kind of one room apartments, I guess, for older people. But yeah, there was a new woman in there. She was like, no, George passed away. I'm the new person. And I was like, well, I have food. Do you want it? she was like, yes, I do. Thank you so much. Yeah. I'm like, awesome. Okay. Happy Thanksgiving. And y'all, you know where to find us. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook group. If you haven't joined our group, it's called Housewives of True Crime Group. And if you want extra glowing skin, go to Five Crimes. That's FIVECrimes.com, and get all of your stuff there. Go there now. I'm going to try to put a Black Friday deal up where it's just on there. So you don't even need a code, but for the weekend of Thanksgiving, it'll just be there. So starting Friday, or actually
let's do it.
Thanksgiving. So let's just do it now. Let's just do it right now. The whole week of Thanksgiving, we'll just have it for you guys. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. FiveCrimes.com. And that's it. Gretchen Poo.
Okay. Clink, clink.
See you guys on Thursday for our special Patreon episode. If you have any questions, send them over right now so we can get to that.
Yes. Can't wait.
Clink, clink.